Hey, Truth Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say, Bush crime family. Welcome to Thursday edition of the Malloy Program. Thanks for tuning in. Let's see how much you can take tonight. All right. Hey, the word of today, or today's word, or the word of the day, is chutzpah. Courtesy of Michelle Bachman. Did y'all see that? The video is making its way around. She was on the Rupert Murdoch terrorist criminal enterprise television thingy, was it today? And she was trying to speak Yiddish, chutzpah, and she called it chutzpah. Nobody said a word. Chutzpah. All right, Bachman. Oh, my God, please, Iowa Republicans, give it to her. Today is Bastille Day. I think it's also the 15th anniversary. Did I hear Rachel say 15th anniversary of MSNBC? Really? Bastille Day. I was listening to Garrison Keillor this morning. He does this thing, if you have NPR in your market, I'm sure you do. Every day here in the East at 5 minutes before 11, Garrison Keillor does this little five-minute bit every day called the Writer's Almanac. And it's just a little five-minute drop-in thing that he does. And it consists of this day in history, usually centered around powerful historic events or a writer, poet, whatever. It may also include the birth anniversary of somebody. And then he winds up with a poem. He'll pick, usually it's fairly contemporary stuff. And Garrison Keillor can really read poetry. Well, anyway, today I was heading to Home Depot to buy pine bark mini nuggets, and I'm listening to, happened to tune into NPR, and I heard Garrison Keillor. He's talking about Bastille Day. He said today is the July 14th, Bastille Day in France, very important day. He said the Bastille was built originally as, I think it's a some kind of a fortress, a castle, what have you. And when the French were starting to talk revolution, one of the people being held inside the Bastille was the Marquis de Sade. And there were actually only 8 prisoners inside the Bastille. The Marquis de Sade made a megaphone out of a sheet of parchment or something, and he started yelling at the people who were demonstrating outside the Bastille that the governor of the Bastille, or I guess we would call it the warden, was executing prisoners inside. And, of course, the mob or the crowd outside went wild. And when the governor heard about this, the governor of the Bastille, he had the Marquis de Sade transferred to a mental institution, such as it was back in the 1780s. I have no idea what that was like. Well, within about a week later, the people stormed the Bastille. There were 7 people inside. And there were about 40 or 50 of the revolutionaries were killed in the storming. Only one defender. But they got the governor and a couple other people, immediately cut their heads off. And they took the governor of the Bastille, they put his head on a pike and paraded it through the streets of Paris. And thus started not just the French Revolution, but what became known as the Terror. And if you, you know, have just a workable knowledge of what happened after Bastille Day and for the next couple of years, the Terror, you know it was a terrifically bloody time in the history of France. But I found it interesting. I don't know if I had heard that before, that Marquis de Sade was one of the 8 prisoners. We're not. But there you go. Bastille Day to our French listeners, how do you say happy Bastille Day? Do you know, Kathy? Bon Bastille Day. How do you say day? D? Bon Bastille D. That's the, no, there is a greeting that I think that that the French use, and my French is no good. It's it is called the, how do you pronounce F-E-T-E with that little thing? Fête de la Fédération. Federation, Fête de la Federation. Never mind. I just thought I would. To our Quebecois listeners, so much for Bastille Day. And to whatever French, Chutzpah, whatever French listeners we have via the internet. The other day, yesterday or the day before, I went off on Moody's accounting company that is thinking about lowering the credit rating of the United States when the Republicans finally pull off their coup. And I was making some comments about Moody's. You know, who are these people? Why are they doing this? Are they un-American? Ron O'Reilly writes, remember, Moody's is the firm that rated all those securitized mortgages as AAA. You're right. Moody's was in on the scam. And Ron says, why the hell do we care what they have to say about anything? They should be eating bologna sandwiches in a minimum security lockup. He's right. He's absolutely right. What do you think of these rat bastards, huh? What do you think of these Republican swine? Did you hear what happened in, where is it, in Minnesota? The Democratic governor, Mark Dayton, has caved in. The two-week-old government shutdown, according to the Washington Post. This is just updated about an hour ago. Democratic Governor Mark Dayton and Republican legislative leaders agreed to a deal for closing the state's $5 billion budget gap without a tax increase. So you millionaires and billionaires in Minnesota, you did it! The people you bought and paid for in the legislative branch delivered for you. Good on you, you scum-sucking cockroaches. Good on you. You win again. You win again, you wealthy, ultra-wealthy, non-working, non-job-producing parasites. You win again. You always win, don't you? Except remember what happened after the storming of the Bastille. Just keep that in mind, you cockroaches, because the day may come, huh? Speaking to reporters outside his office, after a nearly three-hour meeting with Republican legislative leaders, according to the Washington Post, Dayton said that the government shutdown would end as soon as lawmakers flesh out details of the agreement. And that should happen within days. Dayton, who wanted to include a tax increase on the state's top 2% of wage earners as part of the mix to close the funding gap, said the refusal of Republican legislators to budge left him with little choice but to go along with their alternative. So there will be no tax increase for the parasites, the wealthy parasites in Minnesota. None. Dayton said in a letter to Republican legislative leaders, quote, despite my serious reservations about your plan, I've concluded that continuing the state government shutdown would be even more destructive for too many Minnesotans. Therefore, I am willing to agree to something I do not agree with, your proposal, in order to spare our citizens and our state from further damage, end quote. Dayton did ask these Republican swine to back off their proposal to shrink state government employment by 15% in each agency. He called for policy proposals favored by the Republicans to be shelved for the rest of the year. In earlier talks, Republican leaders had pressed for abortion and anti-stem cell research restrictions, as well as stricter voter ID laws. So the Republicans got what they want, and the wealthy in Minnesota win again. C'est si bon de guetter dans ses yeux une esprit merveilleux qui donne la frisson. C'est si bon, cette petite sensation, ça vaut mieux que million.
For a liberal helping of truth, it's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Okay, let me try it. Joyeux le 14 juillet. Juillet. Lié. Juillet. Joyeux le 14 juillet. There you go. Juillet. Okay, I have trouble with July. All right, Reg, there you go. Back to Governor Mark Dayton, who caved to the wealthy in the state of Minnesota, who had a moment's hesitation as to whether or not they had paid enough to buy the legislature. And it finally came clear that they had paid enough to buy the legislature. So the wealthy in the state of Minnesota now will not have to pay their fair share of trying to close a budget gap that was developed partly in homage to them. So the plan that Dayton agreed to will balance the state's budget by cutting programs. No tax increases, cutting programs, delaying state aid to local school districts, and borrowing against future tobacco company settlement payments. But that borrowing is going to cost, you see, because their bond rating had been dropped, which means they're going to have to pay more interest on future borrowing, no matter where they borrow from. So the wealthy continue on their way. The Republicans show once again that they have put together a winning formula. They just say no, no, no. Cut spending. Cut the budget. No tax increases. No. Especially not on our patrons. You sons of bitches, eventually, when Bastille Day comes to this country, I don't know. Do we still have that machete that I had, Kathy? The one that we used to clear out these woods back here behind that. Do we still have that? I think we do. Machete. That's not French. I don't mean to get all weird and gruesome, but, you know, swinging a machete at people who are deliberately destroying America for sport and greed sounds like it might be liberating. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not one to, well, I can't say that. I was going to say I'm not one for violence. That's not true. Used to be true, but it's not true anymore. I think there is very definitely a time and place for violence. This country, this government certainly thinks there is. So if Bastille Day or the equivalent thereof occurs in this country, Viva la Revolution, then I don't know. That machete. It always scared me a little bit because you swing that sucker. I'll tell you, it was very strange to actually go to Home Depot or Lowe's, wherever I got that, about 10 years ago, 11 years ago when we moved here, and to actually buy a machete. You know, all of a sudden I felt all, you know, Central American revolutionary or something. It was just weird. I don't know how many Americans have ever swung a machete. So, to the wealthy in Minnesota and the rest of the country, if Bastille Day or the equivalent comes to this country, I don't know, man. It's going to get very, very strange, don't you think? State colleges and universities, prisons, public works facilities, all of this in Minnesota. Middle school children, elementary school children, state employees, you know, people who in the history of this country have always been kind of the backbone of the country, firefighters, construction workers, public workers, school teachers, nurses. In order for the wealthy in Minnesota to maintain their privileged position, the people whose professions I just mentioned, the people who operate in those professions, will take the beating once again. And you cockroaches can continue to do this for a while. I swear I don't know why we haven't grabbed the machetes yet, but the day is coming as surely as the sun rises and the sun also sets. It is coming when the American people will finally say, that's it. And I know this because how do I know it? I know it because, history, I guess. The history of people everywhere. People in some tribal village in Africa or Afghanistan, or people in the United States who actually lived in tribal villages back in the early 18th century. I guess I look to history.
The primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So what does it say about Governor Mark Dayton, Democrat of Minnesota? What does it say about the state of Minnesota? What does it say about the Republican Party in Minnesota? And the way the citizens of that state have chosen to govern themselves when the Republican legislative branch allows the state to shut down rather than compromise with tax increases on the wealthiest 2% of people in Minnesota. And I don't know what the tax increase was, but I'm sure it was minimal. 2-5%? What? And so the stalemate goes on for 2 weeks. Everything closes down in the middle of summer. And finally, the governor, Democratic Governor Mark Dayton, steps up and says, all right, I don't want to do this, but the people of Minnesota can't continue to suffer like this. So I see that negotiations are something, that's a word that is not in the Republican dictionary. So I'll concede. And concede he did. He conceded everything. As a matter of fact, he agreed to what he had refused to agree to just prior to the shutdown. And, of course, Republican scum, being what they are, included in their demands, proposals to stop abortion, end a woman's right to privacy, stop stem cell research, and have stricter voter identification laws. All of which, the stuff that's anti-woman is blatantly obvious. The stricter voter ID laws has with reducing the has as its foundation the goal of Republicans to reduce the number of voters to as low a number as they possibly can, much easier to manipulate once that number is reduced. So what does it say when the governor concedes and the budget will now be cut in order to close this deficit? State aid to local school districts will not be there. All sorts of programs are going to be cut. According to the Washington Post, Republican lawmakers had said no to several compromise offers from Governor Dayton, who tried desperately to find a way to end the impasse without totally abandoning his original position, but he had to do that. And Larry Jacobs, the University of Minnesota political scientist, said, quote, if something works, you keep doing it. Right now, it feels like the Republicans have a winning formula, and it keeps generating concessions for them. They have found a bargaining style that satisfies their hard conservative base and has the Democrats on the defensive, end quote. And this professor explained that the shutdown put more pressure on the Democrats than the Republicans because of what he calls the growing antipathy toward government felt by many Republicans. What about the Democrats in Minnesota? Don't you people have anything to say about this stuff? Don't you all have machetes? Professor Jacobs added, for the governor, this was an existential crisis, but many Republicans care so little about government and the role it plays that they viewed this in purely tactical terms, end quote. So as a tactic for the Republicans to pay off their wealthy, extremely wealthy patrons, they will stop the functioning of government. No matter who gets hurt, no matter who is inconvenienced, as long as their rich patrons do not have to pay a goddamn thing. Nothing. So how much longer? For the umpteenth time on the Malloy program, I have that question. How much longer before the American public realizes that the Republican Party is here to destroy us and does something about it? Well, who was it? The turtle? McConnell? Where is that? Has suggested that the U.S. Constitution be rewritten. Have you heard about this? Where is it? It's in here somewhere. Hold on a second while I find it. Boom, ba boom, boom, ba boom, ba boom. I got all these stories about Murdoch. Oh, yeah. This is from alternate.org. Speaking on the Senate floor this morning, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell offered what may be the most concise summary of conservative constitutionalism ever spoken. America must rewrite the Constitution to force conservative outcomes because we the people consistently elect lawmakers who disagree with McConnell. Son of a bitch. Now, if that's not one of the most arrogant statements I've ever heard from an American politician, my name is not Malloy. But here's what he said, quote, the time has come for a balanced budget amendment that forces Washington to balance its books. If these debt negotiations have convinced us of anything, it's that we can't leave it to politicians in Washington to make the difficult decisions that they need to get our fiscal house in order. The balanced budget amendment will do that for them. Now is the moment. No more games, no more gimmicks. The Constitution must be amended to keep the government in check. We've tried persuasion, we've tried negotiations, we've tried elections. Nothing has worked. End quote. Now, as Alternate says, it's worth noting just what McConnell is demanding the American people choke down. The Senate Republican so-called balanced budget amendment does far more than simply requiring federal spending to equal federal revenues. It makes it functionally impossible to raise taxes because it will impose a two-thirds supermajority requirement. That's a provision closely modeled after the California anti-tax amendment that was passed years ago that blew that state's finances all to hell, right? It would also, this balanced budget amendment, would require spending cuts so steep that would have made Ronald Reagan's fiscal policy unconstitutional. It's that bad. Ezra Klein rightfully labeled this plan the worst idea in Washington. McConnell has this deeply authoritarian plan to take away our ability to choose how we will be governed. And as I've said so many times on this program, I'm so sick of even saying it, it's part of a much larger conservative agenda to strip American democracy of any meaning at all and force this kind of Republican fascism down our throats. What's wrong with everybody in this country? What is it? I'm serious. Come on. What is it that keeps us just accepting all this? Did you see the video? A auto plant. I saw it on the news tonight. Is it in Michigan, Lima, Dayton, somewhere in Ohio? I don't know. They're going to hire a couple hundred workers. And thousands of people showed up. And then there was another piece of video, I don't know where it's from. State-sponsored loan modification program to help people keep their houses. And there was a stampede. Four people, seriously injured. The country is getting more and more desperate. But if you go to any upscale mall, like I did the other day, we had a very unsettling experience the other day. I did. I think Kathy did, too. My granddaughter is in town for a visit, and she's 2 years older than Molly, which is a lot of fun. It's Molly's niece, and her niece is older than she is. So the four of us went to a moderately upscale mall on the north side of Atlanta because it was convenient. Location was convenient. We went to Old Navy and bought my granddaughter some school clothes, because I like to do that. And then we cruised around the mall for a while. Kathy and I got a cup of coffee. The kids got some ice cream. And we just kind of drifted around this mall. It's Perimeter Mall in Atlanta, if you're interested. And we drifted around the mall. It's got a Bloomingdale's and what else, Kathy? Nordstrom's. It's mildly upper middle class. Nothing extraordinary. I mean, I don't think it has a Saks or anything like that. But I swear to God, I look at the crowds ebbing and flowing around us, and the sacks of merchandise they were carrying. And by the way, nobody had a Old Navy bag but us, frankly. Not that I give a damn, but I just found that kind of interesting. And I watched the people, and especially the younger ones, very self-absorbed. Almost every person had their nose buried in their iPod or their iPan or their iPiss or their i whatever the hell it was, just gizmo after electronic gizmo, one after another. And you talk about a separate reality. I had to sit down. I started to get dizzy. Maybe it was the formaldehyde and all the clothing, but I had to sit down and drink the coffee and watch these people. And I wanted to jump up and scream, do you understand what's going on? And every time I get that feeling, Kathy will say, you're not on the air. Sit down. Shut up.
Renegade Talk Radio done right, from the left, it's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So Mitch McConnell's plan, well, not his plan. He's just a little turd that stands up in the Senate and says what he's told to say. Forcing conservative so-called governance on the American people, it's not conservative, it's fascistic, it includes the following. The Affordable Care Act litigation, you know, Obamacare is what the Republicans call it. In 2008, it says here, elections didn't work because we, the people, elected Barack Obama. See, this is how the neo-fascists look at it. Our electoral system didn't work because we elected Barack Obama and gave him the majority he needed to comprehensively reform the healthcare system. Now, granted, he did not. But he had the opportunity. Conservatives immediately responded with an entirely fabricated constitutional argument against this law that relied on a constitutional theory that no one had ever heard. No one ever heard of it before 2009. Even this, who's this guy? Judge Jeffrey Sutton, a former Scalia clerk and a leader of the conservative states' rights movement, rejected the attack on the Affordable Care Act. Not that I give a damn. You know, when I hear of a judge who is a leader in the states' rights movement, I say, what the hell is he doing on the bench? You know, go back to chicken farming or something that makes more sense than, you know, judge, than trying to overthrow the United States. You know that word, united? Not for much longer, truth seekers. Killing Medicare and Medicaid. In 1964, elections didn't work. And the American people gave Lyndon Johnson the congressional support he needed to enact Medicare and Medicaid. One of the senators from Utah, Mike Lee, Republican, would take away the American people's ability to benefit from this law. He claims that the Constitution must be reinterpreted so that the federal government can't do anything at all about reforming the health care industry in this country. Make it unconstitutional is what these cockroaches are talking about. Bringing back the whites-only lunch counters. In 1962, elections didn't work. And the American people gave the Congress enough votes to pass a ban on whites-only lunch counters. Senator Rand Paul, Republican of Kentucky, disagrees with this outcome, so he would reinterpret the Constitution to make the Civil Rights Act of 1964 unconstitutional. I meant 1964, Lyndon Johnson, the Civil Rights Act. Putting children to work. In 1936, elections didn't work because the American people reelected Franklin Delano Roosevelt and gave him an enormous supermajority in Congress. Roosevelt used this mandate to eliminate the exploitation of child labor. Senator Mike Lee, the Republican psychopath from Utah, disagrees with that too. And he would redo the Constitution to make child labor laws unconstitutional. You see what these sons of bitches are about? And here we sit. Here we sit. When do we reach for the machetes? Cutting students loose. Time and time again, elections haven't worked because the American people elected a Congress that supported education programs. Numerous members of Congress believe that all federal education programs, from Pell Grants to federal student loans to public school funding, must be eliminated entirely because, in the words of Senator Tom Coburn, the Republican from Oklahoma, quote, I don't even think education is a role for the federal government if you read the Constitution, end quote. In other words, truth seekers, Mitch McConnell and the neo-fascist buddies of his plan to strip the people of our ability to govern ourselves. That's only the beginning. The neo-fascists in this country have a clear and comprehensive agenda to rethink the entire Constitution. And democracy or representative government has absolutely no part of that vision. It is not the Republican vision. It is the fascist corporate capitalist vision. And the pigs and the cockroaches in Congress are the ones who have been charged to implement this view, to put it into effect. So, as Mitch McConnell points out, the electoral system doesn't work because the American people keep electing representatives from among their ranks who do things like provide public education or aid to needy families or medical research, just on and on. And those things, you see, are not, there's nowhere in the Constitution where it says money shall be appropriated for medical research. There is no place in the Constitution that says all people really, truly shall be protected by the law. Oh, I know there's equal protection section of the whatever amendment, equal protection under the law, but that doesn't mean that gay folks should have the right to get married. That doesn't mean that whites and blacks should have the right to get married. That doesn't mean any of that. Because the Bible, well, you know. So, I just wonder. I wonder if the day will actually come. That machete that I have is, I haven't used it for a while. I also have a bush hog. But if I get that machete out and get some 3-in-1 oil and get some of those rust spots off and some of that sap from those weeds, those huge-ass weeds that I've cut out, and, you know, rub it down and then get an old whetstone. Yeah, I've got one. And just kind of shoo, 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 shoo. I wonder, you know? True Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say Bush crime family. I can hear the word that you're saying. I can see the love light in your eyes. What's the use in looking for an answer? I might find out it could be a disaster. Hold on to you. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. You are listening to the Malloy program. By the way, let me mention this. I mentioned it last night. Well, I didn't mention it. I read this little thing about three times. Now, there are three ways to support this program. You can buy a podcast for yourself or to donate for a trivia contest. That's one. Sponsor an hour of the program. That's two. Or contribute any amount you wish using PayPal. That's three. There's a new link at the homepage of MikeMalloy.com with all the options that I just mentioned, just a mouse click away. And as independent broadcasters, we truly count on your support to keep on keeping on. So if you've been thinking lately about throwing a couple of bucks in the hat, go ahead. Now you can do it. Whatever you decide, we appreciate it. Dennis Kucinich on this debt bull crap. Listen to this. Dennis Kucinich writes, "The rancorous debate over the debt belies the fundamental truth of our economy that is run for the few at the expense of the many, that our entire government has been turned into a machine which takes the wealth of a mass of Americans and accelerates it into the hands of the law, of the few. Let me give you some examples. Take a war. War takes the money from the American people and puts it in the hands of arms manufacturers, war profiteers, and private armies. The war in Iraq was based on lies. $3 trillion will be the cost of that war. The war in Afghanistan was based on a misreading of history, $500 billion in expenses already. The war against Libya will be $1 billion by September. 50% of our discretionary spending goes for the Pentagon. A massive transfer of wealth into the hands of a few, while the American people lack sufficient jobs, health care, housing, retirement security. Our energy policies take the wealth from the American people and put it into the hands of the oil companies. We could be looking at $150 a barrel for oil in the near future. Our environmental policy takes the wealth of the people, clean air, clean water, and puts it into the hands of the polluters. It's a transfer of wealth not only from the present, but from future generations as our environment is ruined. Insurance companies, what do? They take the wealth from the American people in terms of what they charge people for health insurance, and they put it into the hands of the few. Kucinich says we have to realize what this country's economy has become. Our monetary policy through the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 privatized the money supply, gathers the wealth, puts it in the hands of the few, while the Federal Reserve can create money out of nothing. Give it to the banks, to park at the Fed, while our small businesses are starving for capital. Mark my words, Kucinich writes, Wall Street cashes in whether we have a default or not. And the same type of thinking that created billions in bailouts for Wall Street and more than $1 trillion in giveaways by the Federal Reserve today leaves 26 million Americans either underemployed or unemployed. And 9 out of 10 Americans over the age of 65 are facing cuts in their Social Security in order to pay for a debt which grew from tax cuts for the rich and for endless unfunded wars. There is a massive transfer of wealth from the American people to the hands of a few, and it's going on right now. As America's eyes are misdirected to the political theater of these histrionic debt negotiations, threats to shut down the government, and willingness to make the most to make most Americans pay dearly for debts they did not create. These are symptoms of a government which has lost its way, and they are a challenge to the legitimacy of the two-party system. Dennis Kucinich, well, working backwards, I don't think the two-party system has any legitimacy left, Dennis. I really do not. Nothing. Zero. The Republican Party has devolved into a mass of squirming vermin, cockroaches, slime that does the bidding of the most powerful and predatory capitalists in America. That's what the Republican Party does. The Democratic Party has devolved into a clutch of whiny, hand-wringing, pants-wetting cowards who will not stand up for the Constitution, will not stand up for the American people, will not stand up for ethical behavior, moral behavior, or the American people. So the two-party system, Dennis, is no longer legitimate by any definition. I would challenge anybody to give me a definition of legitimacy that applies to our political system. It is illegitimate. It represents nothing that has any meaning to the American people. Of course it represents something. It represents predatory capitalism and cowardice. Now, as far as the transfer of wealth, that is something that the fascist right has been working on ever since capitalism was invented as a way to deny people the right to life. Capitalism is a death cult economic system. Always has been, always will be. If you take a look, I mean, just, from someone as uneducated as I am, I can say to you, if you take a look at the parallel histories of the development of capitalism and the exploitation of workers, it's a three-track, I guess that still counts as parallel, and the massive, as Dennis points out, transfer of wealth to the military-industrial complex to commit, to perpetuate war, to commit war constantly. Take a look. Did we have wars before capitalism when we were hunter-gatherers? Yeah, and you might say that they were legitimate. A couple of tribes run into each other and, you know, one says, you know, this water hole is mine. They don't know there's another water hole 10 miles away. They don't have a concept of 10 miles. No, this water hole is mine. No, it's mine. No, it's mine. All right, well, I'll beat your ass to death for it. Okay, bring it on. Okay. But that wasn't capitalism. That was survival. So here we are with a capitalist system that has become beyond any definition of predatory, exploitative. It also almost makes everything that Marx wrote about seem quaint and laid back and just kind of the ramblings of a German Jewish intellectual as he sat in London writing, you know, meandering around writing stuff about workers of the world unite back in the 19th century. It's almost cute what Marx wrote. It's almost, I don't know, cartoonish compared to what's going on now. So, Dennis, the transfer of wealth, the 50% of our discretionary spending that goes to the Pentagon, yeah, everything you say is true, but there is no way. The system is not reformable. It simply cannot be. The last time that there was an effort that succeeded in reforming the culture, the society, was in the late 1930s. Different century. Different attitude. Oh, sure, the right wing still wanted to assassinate FDR the same way they want to assassinate Barack Obama. They wanted a military coup back then, the same way they want a military coup now. But you remember what FDR said, I welcome their hatred. I welcome their hatred. Barack Obama, on the other hand, not only does he not welcome the hatred of the banksters, he goes into their nest and asks them for financial help to do it all again.
Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. $3 trillion for the war in Iraq, a war based on lies, greed, the desire to kill people. Half a trillion dollars in Afghanistan based on an invasion and occupation that had absolutely nothing to do with the security of the United States and everything to do with making us even more vulnerable. It's astonishing how this happens. It's just astonishing. But it's going to continue. The objective has not yet been met. It's happening. It happened in Minnesota today when Governor Mark Dayton there, the Democrat, conceded everything that the Republican legislators wanted. So Minnesota will now open for business again. A little bit reduced for the people who do not form a constituency in the General Assembly there, or the legislature, whatever it's called. Students, you know, elementary and high school students and middle school kids. People who depend on the public dole for their existence, who depend on assistance, who depend on counseling services and medical research to perhaps, before they die, find something that will give them a quality of life or a cure even. No. Not going to have that kind of research because the Bible says, you know. Man. According to ABC News, Obama said the Republicans don't call my bluff. I think I mentioned this the other night. He said, this may bring my presidency down, but I will not yield where it concerns short-term extensions. You know, keep in mind what Obama wants. And I don't know if he's playing chess while these dumbasses like Eric Cantor and John Boehner are playing checkers. I have no idea. But the as ABC reports it, it was the most tense of the deficit reduction meetings yet. I think it was yesterday. The one for today just ended. Nothing completed. Nothing decided. After a period of what was described as constructive discussions, Obama embraced $1.7 trillion in cuts as a, quote, foundation, end quote. But Eric Cantor said, quote, wherever we are, it's a long way from the $2.4 trillion needed to meet House GOP goals of dollar for dollar, end quote. So Cantor suggested a short-term extension in order to avoid default and another vote next year. According to ABC, the president, frustrated, said there would be no short-term extensions. It would be bad for the economy. And resolving the deficit issue certainly won't be easier next year in the middle of the political season. He said, if we don't do this now, we won't be able to do it next year. Obama went on to say, quote, this process is confirming what the American people think is the worst about Washington. Everyone is more interested in posturing political position and protecting their base than in solving problems, end quote. I don't agree with that. I think it's only the Republicans. I think there are Democrats who really want to find a solution. I don't necessarily think it's Barack Obama, but I'm talking about Democrats in the House and the Senate. Not that Obama wants, let me restate that. I don't think Barack Obama wants the kind of solution. He wants a solution, but not the kind of solution that the Democrats who elected him to office were hoping that he would champion. And certainly not what progressives or liberals or leftists want. So the only organization that is refusing to work towards some sort of compromise is the Republican Party, a wholly owned subsidiary of the worst predatory capitalism imaginable. Obama said, quote, well, not yet. He said we can get a lot of savings, quote, if the spirit changes from why we can't do things to why we can. He said, I've shown enormous willingness to compromise and have taken huge heat for it, but my responsibility is to the American people, and there comes a point when I need to say enough. It cannot all be on us, Democrats. End quote. He was arguing that Republicans need to give on the revenue side of things as Democrats are willing to do so on the spending cuts. Obama said, quote, don't call my bluff. I'm not afraid to veto, and I will take it to the American people, end quote. More, according to Jake Tapper and Ann Compton, that went on in that meeting yesterday when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Mullen.
I basically am frightened of moral turpitude.
Truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour, we're going to open the phone lines here in a couple of minutes to get your comments if you want to weigh in. Not yet, a couple of minutes. Anyway, back to what happened in the meeting yesterday with this little snot Eric Cantor and the right-wing president Barack Obama as the future of the American people is bargained and negotiated away in order to satisfy corporate America, which is Obama's aim. Or fascist America, which is Boehner and the Republican Party's aim. Not much of a choice, is there? If Moody's, the credit rating agency that announced a review of U.S. credit, downgrades the U.S., President Obama said, quote, it would be a tax increase on every American, end quote. He said there needs to be a long-term debt extension. And he said, quote, this may bring my presidency down, but I will not yield on this, end quote. Then he stood up. Enough is enough, he insisted. We have to be willing to compromise. It shouldn't be about positioning and politics, and I'll see you all tomorrow. Then he left the room. Now, according to the right-wing vermin, he stormed out of the room. No, he didn't. He didn't storm out of the room at all. He just said, I'll see you all tomorrow. We have to be willing to compromise. Tomorrow is today, and nothing was compromised on today, and the meeting is broken up for today. So that's it. Obama said that by Friday, tomorrow, they need to decide where they're heading in the talks, whether a deal's possible or whether they've got to turn their attention to avoiding a default. And, you know, once we slide into this downgrading, and why Moody's has the power to downgrade the credit rating of the United States, which immediately makes the bonds, the interest on the bonds, shoot way up, which increases our debt. you know, Moody's, the company that lied and deceived everybody when they were rating the banksters, like, oh, I don't know, pick one, Countrywide, these real estate thugs and bastards who destroyed that part of the economy. Why does anybody listen to Moody's? Moody's also rates Greece and Spain and Italy, and not that they have any conflict of interest there, right? It's an American company whose credibility is dubious at best, rating foreign countries in a manner that allows predatory capitalism or disaster capitalism to move in and start eating. Jesus Christ, no wonder they hate us. So, Obama says, I'm not moving. And the Republicans give him the finger. So, what do you suppose is going to happen? Now, according to Huffington Post also, the country may not default on its debt obligations for another 3 weeks, you know, until August 2nd or 3rd. But that hasn't stopped us out here in the public from getting ready to place blame. A plurality of registered voters said congressional Republicans are to blame in the event the debt ceiling is not raised. You know, who was it that pointed out today, was it Harry Reid or somebody, that the four top Republicans who are trying to murder America in these talks with Obama, these four cockroaches taken together as a group, have voted 25 times to raise the debt ceiling. 25 times. With no problem, nothing. Just yawn, go to sleep. And those 25 times, of course, were during the reign of the Bush crime family, when all of this destruction was being set up. And then this turtle-ass bastard, Mitch McConnell, heard an interview today somewhere. He's talking about, well, we got to be careful here, we being the Republicans, because now we have been forced to take co-ownership of the financial mess this country is in. Co-ownership? You rancid old fart, you. What do you mean co-ownership? Your people caused it. Well, you and Bill Clinton. But your people did this to us. Co-ownership. You skunk. What do you mean co-ownership? Jesus. When asked to whom they would assign responsibility when the country goes belly up, 48% of respondents said Republicans. 34% said they would blame the Obama administration. Why, of course. Now, that number, that 34%, is very important to the capitalists. I mean, the real predators. The ones that want the country, seriously want the country to default or not. Doesn't really make any difference to the banksters. They don't care. They make money either way. But it'd just be a little bit more difficult after the initial joy of sucking up all the in the bond market where they went short. That, you know, give them a little boost of money like Eric Cantor is going to get. But it'll just make it more difficult. So to the banksters and the predatory capitalists, that 34% who say they would blame the Obama administration for all this, that's an important number. It may be statistically ridiculous. I mean, they didn't survey 200 million adults to get this. But even so, what it means to the predatory capitalists is they're a third of the way home. They're a third of the way home. They got 34% who will blame the Obama administration for the situation we're in, rather than where the blame lies. I remember back during the Bush years when people were trying to point out the Bush was bankrupting the country. You remember what Ari Fleischer and the rest of those cockroaches said? We're not going to play the blame game. They were destroying the country, and that was the meme. We're not going to play the blame game. We're here to straighten things out. We're not going to play the blame game. And what did these thugs do? They got us into two wars that so far have cost us in the trillions, an unfunded prescription drug benefit, quote, that added to the deficit, and the massive tax cuts, trillions of dollars that went to the wealthy for the most part. Oh yeah, the working stiff's got a few bucks, but the kick in the testicles, or the kick in the solar plexus to everybody. You know, women don't have testicles, Mike. Come on. The kick in the solar plexus to everybody came when the tax cuts started to reveal the damage that they were doing. And then the Obama administration, why didn't Barack Obama say something like, I will not yield on this. If this means I get defeated, I get defeated. Where it came to the two-year extension. Why didn't Obama, when those tax breaks to the wealthy were due to expire, why didn't he take a stand then and say no? That was something the American public could get their teeth into. Oh, the rich bastards want to continue to gouge us, and Obama is coming to our defense. Yay, Obama. But he didn't do that, did he? What was his excuse? Well, I had to get an unemployment extension for the unemployed workers. How's that working out, unemployed workers? How much longer do those extensions have to go? Oh, they're running out this when? This December? Really? That was the gift Obama got to got for working people. Unworking people. Not working people. Working people who want to work because they're losing everything but can't. because the predatory capitalists are saying, hey, look, you know, we're sitting on top of a couple $1 trillion, and we've learned something. Of course, we knew it all along. But if we have 100 people in our factory, let's be real. If we have 10,000 people in our factories that are left here in the United States, and we fire 5,000 of them, and then threaten the other 5,000, the other 5,000 are going to work their asses off and be as productive as the original 10,000. Hey, that's a win for us. As far as the workers are concerned, we don't like workers. Ever since that rat bastard Karl Marx told you people to unite, we don't like you. You're an expense. And since you're an expense, you're expendable. So we've got robots and computers and super efficiency from the humans left. You people who are unemployed, underemployed, love that word, underemployed. Oh, you poor miserable bastards. All you people, sorry. Sorry, you always have been expendable. We just didn't quite know how to really cut your throats. Now we do.
Well, this is evident, yeah. In the American way, you must give and I shall take. I will tell you what is moral and...
cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
Okay, after the break, the top of the hour, we'll spend the third hour chatting if you want to. The number's 877-996-2556. Okay. You know, a lot of people complain about the fact that we don't take phone calls. I get a lot of emails from right-wingers that say, you don't have any callers. No, that's not it. We keep the lines blocked. There's just so much to talk about. And I don't know whether I should take more calls or not. Back in the day of talk radio, it was supposed to be caller after caller after caller. The host was supposed to come on and say, okay, tonight we're talking about whether or not to raise the debt ceiling. We're opening the lines. All right, caller number one, never a name or where you were listening or anything. Caller number one, what do you have to say? And the rule back then was 2 minutes. That's it. At the end of 2 minutes, you get rid of them. The corporate jackasses that I worked for over the years always said that. 2 minutes! Oh, bite me. What do you mean 2 minutes? But this program is not caller driven. It's topic driven. And, I sit here and for the most part for 3 hours, just, less the commercials and the breaks and so on and so forth, just ramble on. Anybody can do that now because of the internet technology. You can start your own program. If you have something that you want to say for 3 hours, various things, you can do it very simply. And I'm not trying to be a smartass. It's just that the preponderance of the emails that I get usually say, now, you know, we want to hear what you got to say. Okay, well, that's what we try to do. But not to hog the airwaves, we make an effort to get some calls in here. Soup kitchens in Michigan. You know Governor Rick Snyder there, what he's done. This little article, I think this is at HuffPo, or maybe not. George Gray sells his blood every week so he can afford a bus pass to buy shaving cream. What? He's unemployed and homeless for 2 years. He's 57 years old. He's no stranger to soup kitchens. So when the Michigan Nurses Association opened a temporary soup kitchen yesterday on the Capitol lawn in downtown Lansing, Michigan, George Gray was happy to accept a chicken salad sandwich and chocolate cookie and sit down for a meal. Gray, who moved into a Lansing, Michigan shelter after losing his job as a home health aide, said, quote, I'm just grasping at straws, trying to get unemployment going. I go to Michigan Works office every day. I apply and apply and apply, and I don't get a response. The Michigan Nurses Association, by the way, which with support from state worker and teachers unions, hosted this temporary soup kitchen to highlight what they see as the impact of school aid and social services cuts. In the budget passed by the Republican-controlled legislature and passed into law by the Republican Governor Rick Snyder. The president of the Michigan Nurses Association said state funding cuts to help pay for the $1.8 billion business tax break will lead to rising layoffs of public sector employees. See, once again, tax breaks for the wealthy or the well-connected, and the rest of people can go screw themselves. So, according to the president of the Michigan Nurses Association, this $1.8 billion business tax break on the backs of the unemployed and the underemployed will lead to higher numbers of soup kitchens in Michigan. The president of the Nurses Association said, quote, you've got people now living at the edge who will not be able to pay the bills with the direction of this administration. This is the direction the state is headed. And Rick Snyder said the nearly $2 billion tax break is critical to revitalizing the state's economy and creating new jobs. Why do these son of a bitches like Rick Snyder continue with that meme? Is it because people still buy it? Tax breaks do not create new jobs. Never have, never will. What creates new jobs is demand for products. Consumers. Buyers are the only ones who create new jobs. Without the buyer, or as we are now referred to, without the consumer, no purchases are made. If there are no purchases, inventory becomes static. If inventory is static, there's no need to produce more inventory. So you lay off workers, and you continue to lay off workers until there are no workers left. And then they join the ranks of the unemployed. You see how this works? You lying bastard, Rick Snyder. Tax breaks to the wealthy do not produce jobs. Never have, never will. But they keep saying it. And the bobblehead Republican voters in Michigan keep buying it. You fools, you fools, you unmitigated fools. A speech therapist for the Lansing School District said she fears state cuts will result in the loss of her job and one day jeopardize food assistance for low-income students. She said, quote, it's getting very difficult to live in Michigan, end quote, end quote. Tax breaks for businesses. Oh, that'll revitalize everything. I hate these people. I swear to God, I hate them. I think during this break, we'll be back and take some phone calls for sure. During this break, I'm going to go to the garage and take a look at that machete. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Hey, Truth Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say Bush crime family. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy program. And this hour is sponsored by Carol and Bucco in Vancouver, B.C. And Carol and Bucco write, "Happy Bastille Day, Americans. Revolution now." Thank you, Carol and Bucco. Are those the ones that we met on the cruise all those years ago? Out of San Diego? It doesn't matter. Thank you, Carol. Happy Bastille Day, Americans. She writes, "Revolution now." Carol and Bucco, or Bucco. Is that Bucco? In Vancouver. Yeah, it is Bastille Day. Before we take your calls again, Jeanette wrote regarding what Dennis Kucinich wrote and posted his website, and I shared with you. Jeanette writes, "That's great, Dennis, but by remaining in the Democratic Party, you and Grayson and the rest of the remaining few real liberals, you are enabling all of this. It's like homosexuals, women, or child abuse victims remaining in the Catholic Church and trying to change it from within. I have now officially voted for my last Democrat. I don't care who's running against them. They're worse than Republicans and Libertarians. Republicans and Libertarians and Independents, but they're a non-party, throw the frogs, that's us, right into the pot of boiling water. Democrats throw us into a pot of room temperature water and bring us to a boil slowly while telling us to hope and believe in change. Not just Obama. Remember the vomit-inducing campaigns of Gore, Lieberman, and Kerry Edwards? I didn't vote for them. I voted for Obama. Huge mistake. Sorry. I'd rather be boiled quickly instead of getting my hopes up while being boiled slowly. And the entire planet can't survive capitalism or any of its subservient political parties." Yeah, why isn't that obvious? With everything deteriorating, and not just infrastructure that is man-made or human-made, but the entire planet is just, it's just falling apart because of global climate change. Why doesn't anybody notice this to the extent of wanting to do something about it? How can we do this? How is it possible that we're willing to continue to set fire to our own nest? And I don't know. We've talked about this before. Avoidance, denial, yada, yada, yada. There is a self-destruct button or gene, apparently, inside 99.99999% of humans, I guess. There is a very small percentage of us that does not have that button or that gene. And those are the peacemakers, the ones that even Jesus had the wherewithal 2,000 years ago to realize that the peacemakers were the only ones who would eventually save the human race, the peacemakers. But the Christians don't pay any attention to that anymore. The Christians don't pay any attention to anything that was said on the Sermon on the Mount. Nothing. It just none of it is relevant. None of it. Just listen to some of these crazy bastards once in a while. Listen to the ones that are endorsing Rick Perry, Governor of Texas, Rick Perry's upcoming prayer rally. Rachel Maddow took us through part of the list the other night, August 6th in Houston, Texas. And Right Wing Watch has done a great job of documenting some of these extreme right wingers. These are not people who speak anything about Jesus or peace or heaven or heaven as it is imagined by so many poor misdirected Christians. But one of them, what's this guy? Perry's partners in the event include extremists who believe that tolerance for homosexuality caused the September 11th attacks. They believe that Oprah Winfrey is the harbinger of the Antichrist. They believe the deadly Japanese earthquake was caused by the country's emperor having sex with a demon. They believe the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell caused bird deaths in Arkansas. And they believe that violence should be considered to overthrow President Obama. Son of a bitch, and these are Christians. These are Christian leaders. One self-described apostle who has signed on as an official endorser of Rick Perry's The Response prayer rally is John Benefiel of the Heartland Apostolic Prayer Network, a group affiliated with the New Apostolic Reformation with ties to other The Response endorsers, including, I don't know these people, Cindy Jacobs, C. Peter Wagner, J. Swallow. In a sermon last August, Benefiel argued that America is under a curse from God because the country possesses monuments to pagan idols, and that Americans need to renounce those idols, if not destroy them. Benefiel claims that the Statue of Liberty is in fact, quote, a demonic idol because it represents a false goddess, end quote. I mean, how goddamn sick is this? Oh, Jesus. Jesus! Jesus! Mr. Christ! Jesus! Please come back and murder these pigs. Please. Jesus! I swear I'll accept your divinity. Just do this. Come back and kill these bastards. Seriously. Jesus! You can do it, pal. Benefiel is also the Statue of Liberty is a demonic idol used for pagan worship. This is Rick Perry's good buddy. In the same sermon, Benefiel claims that homosexuality is a plot by the Illuminati to control the population. He says that the Illuminati intend to reduce the world population. And that along with the recently passed health care reform law, the Illuminati will use homosexuality as a perverted way to bring about a death culture and population control. Benefiel also insists that homosexuality is a stronghold of the demon god Baal. Do you know these goddamn people walk among us? Do you understand this? And Rick Perry is having this prayer rally. And these people are going to show up. John Hagee of the so-called Cornerstone Church said that President Obama is a dictator. Hagee is involved in organizing Rick Perry's The Response prayer rally. He previously claimed that Adolf Hitler was a hunter sent by God to hunt Jews. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Jesus, please. I mean, I know you're kind of a myth, but would you do this for me? Would you please just float down on a cloud and murder these filthy pigs. I mean, really, really turn them into chunks. Please, please.
Watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Carol and Bucko in Vancouver, BC, Canada are sponsoring this hour. The message, happy Bastille Day, Americans, revolution now. John is in Ellenwood, Georgia. Hello, John.
Mike Malloy, I absolutely love you, and without you, I wouldn't have survived the Bush years. I found you in 2005. And I want to say thank you. You probably saved my life.
Well,
or at least kept me out of jail.
I kept you out of jail.
Yeah, because there was death and destruction on the highways back then, baby.
I hear you. Okay. I hear you. No, wait. Is this John the house painter?
No, this is John the truck driver, and I'm going to change my name to Jack.
Oh, yeah.
I lived in San Francisco all those years, and everybody knew me as Jack. And then I went down to Ontario, California, and I went back to being called John. But there's too damn many Johns, and I don't want to be confused with those lunatics that seem to be suffering from mad cow.
Okay.
As it spreads across the country. So I want to differentiate myself from the mad cow crowd.
Okay, that's good, John.
Yeah.
All right.
And frankly, I think that's what's going on in our government. It looks like mad cow writ large.
Doesn't it?
It does.
There's a severe insanity
out there.
There is some kind of madness that is rampant, that's eating its way through Eric Cantor's brain and John Boehner's brain. And I don't think Barack Obama.
He's insulated. He's clean.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think he's infected by this killer virus. He's got his own problems. His problem is he has a great big yellow streak running up and down his back.
No, he doesn't. No, we've got to quit dumping on him. And you know, he was elected to try to change 30, 40, 50 years of bad policy. And he's not going to do that in
okay,
one round.
Okay, wait, John, I agree with you on that. But all I'm asking is that he keep his campaign promises.
Yeah, well, maybe he promised more than he could accomplish in one round.
Well,
we'll give him two rounds.
Well, what about the campaign promise of there would be a public option available in the Health Insurance Reform Act, and when it came time to add the public option, he just turned his back on it and told people to, piss off. I'm not going to do it.
I'm even farther to the left than you are in this, because that's step one.
No.
Step five will be when the economy crashes and the Obamaites or whoever's in charge at that point nationalizes the entire medical system. And then we'll have our public option.
Well, we should have national health care to begin with.
We absolutely should have.
I mean, Harry Truman, there's no reason in the world.
I agree.
Harry Truman tried to put it in place over half a century ago. Even FDR didn't attempt that, I don't think. Maybe he did.
Well, Buckminster Fuller of the same age tried to build these beautiful domes, and they were round and they were clean lines, and this whole country went to the square range, and they're still going down the square road, and so all we can do is observe, try to correct their path, and stand out of the way as they run over the cliff.
Well, yeah, it would that it were that simple, but when they go over the cliff, they take all of us with them.
Yeah, we got to stay out of their way. Hey, listen, can I say that Nancy Pelosi, if she, you know, the Democrats don't, it's not that they don't have a spine, they're too intellectual. They approach everything as an intellectual argument, and the Republicans, who are nothing, it's all about money with Republicans. It's nothing but money. Don't believe in freedom, don't believe in justice, don't believe in the American way, because with Republicans, it's only money. So the Democrats need to develop a little aggression to go with their intellectualism. I.e., Nancy Pelosi, please, put impeachment back on the table. You may not be able to pull it off, but it's enough of a threat that it'll get their attention.
Impeach who?
Oh, impeach them all. No. Well, let's see. Who do we start with? We'll start with Bush.
Okay.
That's when she said impeachment off the table.
But wait, there's only one problem, John. Nancy Pelosi doesn't have that power now. It'd be up to Eric Kent or up to John Boehner to do that. But I get your point. Point taken. All right, John, I got to move on. We got commercials here. Thanks, pal. And don't be a stranger. Check in again. Jack. We'll call him Jack. What is this? From Jan in New York City. Mike, when Carter left office, the national debt was less than $900 billion. Under Clinton, another $1 trillion was added. All the rest of the debt was under Reagan, Bush, and Bush. Also under the Clinton budget, there was a surplus, and the entire national debt would have been zero in 2010 had Bush not done what he did. When will people wake up? Jan in New York City. Never, Jan. Never. People will never wake up. It's going to take machetes. We'll be right back. Used to do all my favorite analgesics. Anything to numb these feelings. Turning on the television just might be my last decision. Everybody's out there looking for a new pill to make them. Before the hour, this is the Malloy program. This hour is sponsored by Carol and Bucko in Vancouver, BC, Canada. Their message, Happy Bastille Day, Americans, revolution now. I hope it's Bucko. Yeah, that's Bucko. Ron is in Scottsdale, Arizona. Hello, Ron.
Hey, what's up, man? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
What I basically want to do is start basically like another labor movement, which is the under and unemployed labor movement. And while we're all applying for jobs and underemployed and have nothing to do, there's certain things that we can do. One of the things that I do is while I'm applying for applications online and stuff like that, if I run across a job that, you know, they want you to jump through a lot of hoops, basically.
Right.
They want you to have a clean driving record, and they want you to have a clean background. They want you to pass a drug test, and they want you to be clean cut and this and that, and they're paying $7.50 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to work a cash register or drive a car or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I basically send them an email, a short email, courteous, you know, 7 or 8 lines, saying, if you want all of, you know, people to jump through all of these hoops, you are going to have to pay more, which goes back to what you were saying. I was listening a couple of breaks ago. You know, wages come before labor. You have to pay somebody to make something. Labor comes before, you know, profit. I mean, you cannot if you're not going to pay people to do things, nobody can afford to buy anything or use any of your services. And I basically say in the email at the end of it, if you want to pay, if everybody in America made $8 an hour, we would be Mexico or a third world country.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is maybe something that we can do to get our point across, is that we are here, and you can't just ignore us, and we need jobs. And if you want to, you know, you want to be tough and say, oh, we're job creators, well, then create some jobs.
Well, you know, Ron, I so totally agree with you, and it kind of gets to what I've talked about in this program a lot. People just taking a day or a weekend and doing nothing to show capitalist America that we're serious and that we have the power. But here's the thing. Capitalism looks at you. And me, if I were still participating in it, which I'm not, I am a small business now, and there's a difference between a small business and capitalism. If you are expendable, you don't mean anything, and your emails don't mean anything. And if you had 10,000 people who would sign that email, it would still mean nothing. Capitalism looks at you as a liability, not as an asset. Now, that's counterintuitive to people like you and me who are from the working class. We think the same way, that in order for capitalism to make a profit, it has to have workers. In order to have workers, it's got to pay a decent wage. Even the old anti-Semite, psychotic Henry Ford understood that. That's why he started paying, I don't know what it was, a dollar an hour, so that his workers could afford to buy his cars, which would mean more demand for the cars and more pay for the workers, and so on and so forth. But we've gone beyond that era now. Capitalism is no longer, it doesn't have to be labor intensive. And the capitalists know this, because we now have machines and computers and automation that can do the job. The only thing that we need is somebody now. We don't need, the capitalism doesn't need people to work on an assembly line. They just need someone to repair the machine that runs the assembly line. Now, I realize I'm giving you a very simplistic response here, but the fact is, capitalism doesn't care if you live or die. In fact, it would prefer that you did die, figuratively speaking. Just get out of their face, because $7 an hour or $8 an hour, and we're all Mexico. So that doesn't mean anything. As a matter of fact, capitalism now laughs at that, because they know that $3 an hour and we're all China, or 80 cents an hour and we're all Vietnam. So it doesn't matter. This is the horrible part, Ron. You and I completely agree, or I agree with you. I mean, you know, I'm listening to what you had to say, and I agree with what you're saying. The problem here is that in order to strike a deal with capitalism, you have to be able to strike a deal with capitalism. And capitalism tells you to piss off. It doesn't care about you. It doesn't care what you do. It matters not. We were talking earlier tonight, the efficiency or the productivity, which is the same thing, of the American worker is the highest in the world. But we are some of the least compensated people in the world in terms of overall compensation for the work that we've been asked to do. Corporate America, or capitalism in general, just capitalism as a labor theory or an economic theory, is destructive. It is anti-life. It is anti-family. It is anti-environment. It is anti-government. It is anti-everything. It has to be, by definition. That's why I laugh my ass off sometimes when I get these emails from people who say, well, my lawyer said you're a hypocrite because capitalism is what keeps you going. No, it isn't. If every single advertiser we had pulled out tomorrow, you know, these corporate advertisers that you hear on this program, we would continue to broadcast. I don't work for a corporation. I don't work for anybody. This, what we have is a small business. I'm a great champion of small businesses. They are not run on the kind of capitalism, predatory capitalism I'm talking about. They might have an investor. Kathy and I were our own investors. You know, we saved up a few bucks. We had a few bucks saved and said, let's do this on our own. I'm sick of ABC. I'm sick of Cox Communications. I'm sick of the predatory sons of bitches that ran Air America. Blah, 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 blah. The point I'm trying to make is that the only salvation for this culture, not this culture, but this society, this population, this country, is to end capitalism. End it. It cannot be compromised with. You cannot make a deal with a lion that is about to rip your goddamn head off. You can't. You can't do it. So there has to be a different system. In this country, capitalism has just about run itself off the rails. By that I mean it's just about worked everybody in this country to death. Wages have gone down, relatively speaking, since the 1970s. They're never going to go up. The jobs are never coming back. Capitalism is never going to compromise with the American worker, because the American worker, the Chinese worker, I don't care who the worker is, capitalism sees workers as liabilities, not assets. The small business, on the other hand, you know, a shop, a store, a little machine shop that hires 20 people, a little steel company that has 100, a little broadcast operation that hires 6, they do care. You can operate inside that. You can go ahead and provide yourself with food, clothing, and shelter. And nobody can ever touch you. But as far as capitalism, no. It is a murderous, violent, warmongering, war-causing, sick, twisted system. Always has been, always will be. It's just that when capitalism began as an economic system, that was the beginning. So it had the entire world, the entire global population, whatever it was at the time. When did real capitalism start? 1840s? I don't know. The Industrial Revolution? Whatever. And I want to argue the point. Maybe it started long before. Don't care. But when it really dug its teeth into workers and the environment and the planet, that was the beginning of the end. Because it knows no mercy. It shows no mercy under any circumstances. Provide me with profit. Provide me with more profit. Provide me with ever more profit. And get your filthy little workers out of the way. They are irrelevant. You 100 workers who want to go on strike, I can machine gun you, and there'll be 100 more that I have made sure unemployed who will take the place, your place. And when I'm tired of them, I machine gun them, and there's another 100, and another, and another, and another. Until finally what? So now the objective, rational thought, thinking, I don't know how to describe it, insists that the predatory capitalism that runs this planet now has to be replaced. Until it is, we're going to continue. There's you're going to cut a deal with the lion that has your head between its jaws? How? How are you going to do that? Are you going to prevail upon the billionaires and the multi-billionaires to cut you a little slack? You're going to send in a polished up resume. You're going to send in an email. Well, if you don't want to pay me money, screw you. I'm not going to work for you. I'm sorry. That's not going to work. 10 before the hour. Laura is in Independence, Virginia. Lawrence, welcome to program. Or Laura, welcome to program.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I want to know first, are you holding the machete?
Not yet.
All right, because we're going to talk about something called the Peace Pentagon.
Peace Pentagon.
Yes, as in the anti-Pentagon, as in the parallel universe Pentagon that I am trying to build, ironically enough, in a town called Independence, Virginia. And the Washington Post picked this story up last week and sort of double entendred it with Independence Day. And since Bastille Day is part of the theme tonight, I think this is even more apropos. I run an interfaith charity called the Oracle Institute, and we moved to the tip of the Bible Belt last year. I was in Northern Virginia, where I can find kindred spirits like you. Decided to move south to see if we could bring an interfaith message down there. And the local evangelical churches showed up in droves at our permitting hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And the board of supervisors down there rejected our permit.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on Radio Islam last week talking about it with the founder of the Rutherford Institute. That's a Virginia-based sort of ACLU type of foundation that has taken on our cause on a pro bono basis, thank God. And
well, you do know that the Rutherford Institute is decidedly right-wing leaning.
Yes, which is another irony to this story. They do have that reputation, and I think that's one reason why they took this case, is they wanted to show that when the First Amendment's involved, they shouldn't be playing favorites, and they absolutely have been representing us with utmost zeal. But the point made last week on the radio show, Radio Islam, was that this is a new low. I mean, I'm not even trying to build a mosque. I mean, we're not even talking about what's now becoming, Islamophobia. I mean, we're at a stage in our regression where I can't build an interfaith center because the Christians who were involved aren't real Christians. In other words, if you're not, blue blood fundamentalist, you're not welcome.
Well, I would I'm not trying to be petty here, but I would say they are real Christians. They are just not followers of the message of the historic Jesus. They follow some other message, some sick, twisted perversion of that simple message of 2,000 years ago. And I'm conceding that there was a man named Jesus who was a Middle Eastern Jew, a Palestinian Jew, who wandered around the Middle East 2,000 years ago trying to enlighten people. But that, that's about as far as I go where it concerns Jesus. But these people today, they are, by their own definition, they're Christians. They just don't follow the teachings of the person that they say was their avatar, their son of God. They have nothing to do with that. Oh my God, no.
No, they're still sort of wedded to Yahweh and don't even realize that.
If even that. But I'll tell you what, why don't you, we're about out of time here, Laura, why don't you send me an email with a link to whatever you have up on the internet, and we'll talk about it some night, okay?
Okay, that sounds great. Thanks,
I would appreciate it. Thanks, Laura. Thanks for checking in. Do send me that link. By the way, this hour has been sponsored by Carol and Bucko in Vancouver, British Columbia, with the message, Happy Bastille Day, Americans, Revolution Now. And if not now, certainly after lunch, right? Yeah, I think anybody with that tries to establish a beachhead that is in the South that is seen by religious fundamentalists as being a competitive spiritual philosophy. It's all about the competition. That everything will be done to stop that organization, whether it, I don't care what it is. It can be anything from Islam to Scientology. Anything that might take away market share from these horrific evangelical Christian so-called organizations will be fought tooth and nail. And it's not about trying to stop the devil from establishing a foothold. It's about competition for the religious dollar. Don't forget, there is money. There is lots of money in religion, especially here in the South, where, you know, people are just so willing to believe in haints and spirits and things that fly through the air and ghosts and demons. And, I mean, take a look at Rick Perry's upcoming August 6th, prayer nonsense. These people aren't praying. I just hope when this group gets together, wherever they're getting together with all these speakers, it would just be, again, you know, my begging Jesus to show up from the 27th dimension, wherever he's hanging out, probably smoking a reefer and laughing about all this stuff. But if he would just come on over, Jesus, and destroy these bastards. Just please do it. And if you can't do that, then send several thunderbolts into that stadium. It'll be filled with people who are twisting what you had to say 2,000 years ago into a perverted mass of filth. So for heaven's sake, don't be like Obama, Jesus. I mean, do something. Do something. Send a few million volts of heavenly electricity into that gathering. Get that Hagee bastard first. He makes a big target. And then get, you know, I mean, just do it, because those people will love the idea that Jesus himself killed them. I mean, the poetic aspect of that is almost impossible to bear. You understand what I'm saying? Jesus, come on, man, do it. See, there I am talking to myself again. Now, if I get an answer tonight, I'll let you know tomorrow. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.